I call the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order on March 21st, 2024. I believe there's a quorum present, so we'll do the approval of minutes. Representative Purcell.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes from March 19th, 2024.
Representative Purcell moves approval of minutes for March 19th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails and the minutes for March 19, 2024 are approved. So we have a couple of presentations today. We'll start with our first presentation from USDA, Dan Lofus. If you can make your way to the table, identify yourself for the record and begin. Thank you for being here today. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. My name is Dan Lofkus. I work as the state statistician for the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, and we work on the Census of Agriculture. So today, Chairman Vang and committee, thank you for the invitation to talk a little bit about the census, and I'd like to dive into a little bit of those numbers and show you some of the results, particularly with regard to new and beginning farmers and producers in general, as to how that turned out with the 2022 Census of Agriculture. So first off, just a quick definition. The data represented in the 2022 census represents that data compiled from operations that meet this farm definition, which is any place from which $1,000 or more of agricultural products were produced and sold or normally would have been sold during the census year of 2022. So an operation would qualify under that definition, then all data they provided to the census would be included in the counts. And so that tracks through the rest of the presentation as well. The Minnesota, just a couple of large kind of macro numbers to put the year 2022 into perspective. The number of Minnesota farms tallied 65,531, which was down 5% from 2017. And so the census is done every 5 years. So the 2022 with its previous in 2017. So I will have a lot of comparisons to 2017. Land and farms was relatively unchanged, so with the drop in farms, but relatively unchanged in land and farms, then that increases the average size of farm to an increase up to 388 acres. A couple other things that are important when we start looking at all the numbers. Of course, 2022 was a good year in agriculture, and so the value of ag products sold was up 55% from 2017. And that outpaced the increase in production expenditures, which went up 37% from 5 years earlier. And so in net, there was an increase in net income for farmers in Minnesota on average. And it nearly doubled given those circumstances. So with those macro numbers, then I'd like to dive into a little bit of the detail behind new and beginning farmers, a little bit about sales directly to consumers, as well as just a little bit from our land use section and touch on some cover crop information. And these items really are things that showed some movement in the last 5 years, and so that's partly why I'd like to highlight those today. So a new and beginning farmer is anyone with a new and beginning producer is anyone with fewer than 11 years or 10 years or less of experience on a farm, on any farm, okay? And so it's important to understand that. And in 2022, we tallied nearly 30,000 new and beginning producers with less than 11 years of experience. Okay. So that total is up 27% from 2017, which is a pretty sizable increase. Now, even though the average age of producer still climbed, and it has for many censuses in a row, the average age of all producers is 57.1 years old. Up from 56.5. The increase in the new and beginning farmers, which are obviously at a lower average age, held back that increase in the overall age. Okay, so that's something that people pay a lot of attention to. I mentioned the term producer, so I want to define what producer means to the ag census. First of all, a producer is anyone making decisions on a farm or ranch, which is pretty simple. Planting, harvesting, livestock decisions, marketing decisions, you know, normal things you would attribute to a producer of agriculture. The difference with the census is respondents are given the opportunity to report up to four producers from each farm. OK, Okay, so the in one place in the questionnaire, we asked for the grand total of producers involved, and they can report as many producers as they have. And then when it gets to the demographic section, we allow up to four, given the space in the census questionnaire. So the data with the detailed demographics that I'll be going over is a summation or a tabulation of those records with up to four producers. Okay, so to put it in context, we have about 1,337 operations with five or more producers in Minnesota. And so those operations had the opportunity to report up to four in terms of detailed demographics. So not all producers are tallied in these counts, but we've tallied the majority of them. And as you can see, 114,000, almost 115,000 producers overall were tallied with demographic data included, as compared to a little over 118,000 grand total. So there are a few operators that are not in this tally, just given space. So looking at new and beginning producers a little bit closer, I've got this in looking at it a couple different ways. This is a breakdown by age. And so in green is the 2017 number, and in blue is the 2022 number. You can see that 35 to 44 age group has more new and beginning producers in it than any other group. It accounts for about 27% of that total. Second largest is 25 to 34. But certainly, as you can see, based on this, new and beginning does not mean young, and so you can be a newer beginning producer and still be 65 or 75 years old, because there were some operations tallied in that age group as well. Looking at a little different way, and this is in operations and not producers. So the number of farms with at least one newer beginning producer is represented on this chart by size of farm. And so there's five acreage categories along the bottom. Again, green is 2017 and blue is 2022. And so you can see across all those size categories, we have an increase in the number of new and beginning producers by size of farm as well. And we tallied about 18,914, actually exactly 18,914 farms with at least one newer beginning producer in 2022. Another way to look at it is by farm type. And so this is using the North American Industrial Classification System, or NAICS. And the advantage to using this classification system is it allows us to categorize each farm into only one enterprise category. So as you know, farms are diversified. They'll have more than one, multiple enterprises under the same farming operation. And so one way to try to figure out a way to count only each operation in one category and one category only is to use this classification. And basically, a farm is classified under a farm type based on what enterprise produces the majority of the value of sales for the farm. So anything 50% or more of the value of sales, that's where that farm count goes within this chart. So you can see the majority of the new and beginning producers are in grain and oilseed production, followed by other crops. And in other crops, the majority of that can be considered hay, which accounts for a lot of that acreage, but also other things like dryable beans or sugar beets or things like that as well. The only categories that fell in new and beginning producers were a few of the livestock items. So beef cattle, cattle feedlots, and dairy cattle and milk, those had slight decreases in the number of new and beginning farmers from 5 years ago. We can dig a little deeper too and look at within the under 11 years, we can split that up into two categories. So the chart on the left are operations with the number of producers by economic class with those that have 6 years or less than 6 years experience. And so you can see even in those categories by economic class, which adds government payments and value sales together, all categories except the under $1,000 in sales in 2022 showed an increase in new and beginning producers, with the exception of one category, half a million to a million fell just slightly. But other than that, all the other categories did show an increase. If we move to the right on this slide, this shows producers in 6 to 10 years of experience. And all of those categories showed some pretty significant increases, with the exception of the 50 to 100,000, which did fall just slightly. Okay, but a pretty good increase across all of those different categories. Back to the number of producers by race, and so the producers and respondents on the census have the opportunity to report the demographics, including race. And so the number of new and beginning producers by race, so American Indian, Black, and Hawaiian all showed an increase with a slight decrease in Asian operators or new and beginning operators. And for the Asian operators, although the under 6 year category fell from 5 years ago, so we just didn't pick up as many operators with less than 6 years of experience. But when we look to 6 to 10 years, that category held even from 5 years ago. A couple other demographics to think about when we talk about female operators. So a little over 5,000 new and beginning female operators were logged in the census. And that was an increase both for the 5 years or under, or also 6 to 10 years, both showed increases. Hispanic ethnicity operators went up slightly, as well as those with military service went up slightly too over the 5 years. So one thing I thought about is, since we had an increase in the number of new producers, are those new producers actively involved in the decision-making process of the farms? And so we did ask them about that. So for each of those producers, what decisions are they involved in? And so we asked about estate planning, record keeping and financial management, marketing decisions, livestock, crop decisions, and day-to-day decisions. And so the blue is 2022 and green is 2017. And you can see that those new and beginning producers are really involved in all aspects of the farm. And so in different ways and different manners across different things, but certainly we showed increases in all of those decision makings to follow along with the overall increase in producers as well. Let's switch gears a little bit to food sales directly to consumers. So that's another aspect of the census we ask about. And this breaks down the number of operations with sales directly to consumers. And so we picked up 3,339 operations that had sales in 2022 directly to consumers for a total of $44.7 million in sales for that year. And that compares to 3,533 operations 5 years earlier, so just a bit fewer from then to now, but the value of sales is much higher. So the increase in crop and livestock values in 2022 over 17 created an increase, even though the total number of operations fell. And then you can see how that breaks down across farm size. Certainly the two smallest farm sizes account for the majority of operations that sell direct. Okay, so 1 to 10 acres or 10 to 50 acres account for the majority of those operations, even though we do show some all the way up into the very largest operations as well. Next is directly to retail markets or institutions or food hubs. So things, for example, grocery stores or restaurants, institutions like schools or school districts, and then aggregators or food hubs. And so we had just over 1,000 operations reporting of sales to those types of outlets for almost $109 million in sales in 2022. And that's up a lot from 2017. So that's up, the sales is up 58% from 5 years ago to this outlet of marketing. And the number of operations is up 61%. And so you can see still those two smaller size categories in acreage account for the majority of the operations that are direct marketing. And the last thing I wanted to touch on is a little bit of land use, because this is an item that increased a bit from 5 years earlier. And so this is a percent change in cover crop acres by size of farm. And so you can see in 2022, we accounted for 760,000 acres of cover crop, up from 579,000 5 years earlier. And you can see in those categories which size of farms represented that increase in acreage. Now overall, cover crop only represents 4% of the harvested cropland in Minnesota. So there's a lot of more room for cover crops, but this is showing an increase in the adoption across many different sizes of farming operations. So with that, I just want to kind of touch on the fact that I looked at this data in a lot of different ways, and I encourage others to do that as well. So you can look at the same general item and summarize it or look at it through value of sales, through number of farms, size of farm, tenure of operation, all kinds of different ways through the census data. And I think that's important when looking at some of these topics to do a good job of kind of analyzing what the real move in some of these topics are, is to look at it a couple different ways. Another nice thing about the census is not only is it national and state level, and I restricted my comments to state level today, but it goes down to the county level too. So the advantage of the census is it gets it down to your local area and to your local farmers as close as we can get it. And so that's one of the powers of this product. And to close out, I just want to say thank you to Commissioner Peterson and the MDA and all the commodity groups across Minnesota, because they really did a good job of helping us promote the census and encourage response. Because without the farmers' help, then none of this would be possible. And so we really appreciate all of the farmers' interest in it and taking the time to fill out a 24-page Census of Agriculture questionnaire. So with that, I'll turn it back to the committee.
Thank you, Dan. This is a very helpful presentation, so I appreciate you coming by and presenting with us on the latest data on the Ag Census. So I'll open up for questions from the committee, and I see Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Vang, and thank you, Mr. Loftus, for being here today. And I enjoy going through data like this. I guess I'm probably a little bit of a nerd learning that. But I'm kind of curious, yes, this is USDA data for Minnesota. How do you have a kind of a brief overview of how this compares to other states? Is it fairly similar? What yeah. states are we closest to, farthest away from?
Right. So
Dan?
In terms, yeah.
We go through the chair, so I'll give you permission to speak before the committee. So please proceed.
Thank you very much. So in terms of the new producers and beginning producers, the rate of increase in Minnesota is very similar to what you see nationally. And so nationally across all states, we were seeing an increase in the number of producers that are being tallied in the census. And so the interesting thing, and let me just back up a slide if it's okay with you, kind of moving kind of fast here, but one thing that was interesting to me, and this is again new and beginning producers, and the map shows a little bit from state to state and down to the county level. And one thing within Minnesota alone, the new and beginning producers, if you look, are somewhat concentrated in terms of percent in the 7-county metro area, I would say. And if you look across the other states, you can see something very similar in some of these other states, where the population centers are showing a larger percentage of new and beginning producers. And so you're starting to see, I think, urban agriculture showing up in some of the census data and some of those types of activities, with maybe the exception of West Texas and probably the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And so maybe you need to be a new producer to farm in the UP, I don't know. But those are probably two exceptions I can see off this map. But I would say Minnesota tracks very similarly with other surrounding states and the nation in terms of these numbers that I looked at today.
Representative Nelson. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, a couple of questions. Your definition up there, 10 years or less, is that your entire definition for new and beginning farmers, producers?
Yeah, so it's
Dan.
Sorry. It's definitely defined by the experience level of the producer as they report it. And so for each producer within the demographic section, we ask them how many years they've worked on this farm and how many years they've worked on any farm. And then that information is used to categorize as someone with less than 11 years of experience, which we term as newer beginning, or more than 11 years for comparison. But again, it's a description of experience and not necessarily age or anything like that.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does that also include filing a Schedule F as far as farm income?
Dan?
In general, those certainly would correlate, sure. But our definition of $1,000 or more is not tied really in any way to a Schedule F. nor do we check against Schedule Fs and that type of thing. It's not really part of the process within the census. But, of course, they would correlate. So anyone with income, farm income, and a Schedule F, those certainly would correlate to the number of responses that we're getting on the census.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Question about your one of your last slides on cover crops.
Yeah.
Just trying to understand what a cover crop acre would be. If somebody seeds a cover crop and it's dry and it never germinates, is that counted? Or how long does a crop land have to be covered by vegetative growth to be termed a cover crop?
Dan?
There isn't a defined set of time necessarily. So the whether an acre is included as a cover crop acre is somewhat defined by the respondent themselves and whether they planted a cover crop on those acres. But there isn't necessarily a percent germination or there isn't a duration of time associated with our census question.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just one more question. And on your slide that showed the actual production of some of these new and beginning farms, oil seeds and grain were the biggest, and then you talked about other crops, hay, edible beans, and beets. I didn't see anything on this slide about specialty crops. Where would they be on this slide?
Dan?
So a lot of the specialty crops would be included in as one of the items within the vegetable or melon, tree fruit, or something like that, or greenhouse nursery floriculture. Those items are included in a lot of those categories. Because I forget exactly how many commodities are allowed within the census, but virtually anything that can be grown on a farm, we allow it to be reported on the census. And then once it's reported, then we'll figure out how to publish it and where to categorize it. And so all of those specialty items are included in here somewhere, assuming they met the definition of a farm, which is $1,000 in sales.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Vang. And kind of one of the Representative Anderson's questions sparked a question for myself. Is there a difference between a farm employee and a producer? I've had, you know, high school kids that have worked for me. They've been an employee. They haven't made day-to-day decisions, but then now I know at least one of them, you know, has some cattle. He does a little bit of farming now, and you know, so yes, there was time that he worked for me, but I don't believe that would be counted into 10 years or less of experience. You know, yes, there was experience working on the farm, but I don't know if he would have been considered a producer in there. You know, I know when I've gotten the ag census, I didn't include him as a, you know, producer. But I'm just wondering if you can give a little clarity on that.
Dan?
Yeah. So, excuse me. So, in terms of a producer, that producer could be an owner, could be an operator, could be a renter, could be a manager or employee who's a hired manager. It all boils down to the decision-making process for that particular person. And so that person could be included as a producer on the census questionnaire if the respondent who's filling it out decides that that person is a decision-maker for the farm. Okay. And so once that is determined, then we ask for that person in your example, we ask how many years have you been operating any farm? And from our perspective, it's by making decisions, a decision maker for a farm, on any farm and then on this farm. And then between the two of them, along with the decision making checks that they'll report later, helps us identify whether that's a producer or whether that's a hired worker of some kind. And so also in the census we do collect labor, ag labor, and so that person, whether it's logged as a producer or whether it's logged as a hired operator, they are included in the census in one of those two places.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you.
I have one question. So I'm looking at the slide with the demographics of race, and I just want to see how that is compared on a national level. If you know, it seems it's good to see in Minnesota that we're seeing a slight increase of farmers of color, BIPOC producers. I want to see if other states are also seeing the same things, or yeah.
Okay. Very good. I don't have the U.S. numbers in front of me or some of our neighboring states, but I'd be happy to pull those together and provide them to your office for sure.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Loftus, so not every farmer, producer, operator takes the survey. So how do you take that survey data and model it out to the population data to make sure it's representative?
Dan?
Very good question. So just a response discussion. So in Minnesota, we accounted for 66% response rate across all the questionnaires that we mailed out to producers. And that was down 7.4% from 5 years ago. The bright side is we're higher than the U.S. average. So the U.S. average is 61%, and that was down 10%, or almost 11%. But you're right. Given the fact that there's non-response, then we have to use models to make up the difference between those that reported and those that did not. Okay? And so we have models that are based off of, I believe, 64 different variables, including things like crops, livestock, demographic data, value of sales, all kinds of different things that describe a farm that go into that model that we use to represent that missing piece that did not respond to the census. Okay? So part of it is just response. So we sent a questionnaire to the right person because they are a farmer, but they decided not to return it. But there's also other things that we need to adjust for too, because I may have sent a questionnaire to the wrong person who I thought was a farmer but turned out not to be, or the other way around is I didn't get a questionnaire to someone who should have gotten one. So all of those things kind of apply, and those models help us make up that difference for those different situations. We look at it two different ways. So the census, of course, is a list-based process, a list of farm operators. And the more complete that list is, the better we are. However, any list like that is, we certainly know, is not complete. So we know there's some adjustment that's going to have to be necessary. And so we'll look at agriculture in a little different way. We'll look at it from an area perspective as well. And so early on in the process, we select roughly 44,000, I believe, tracts of land or segments of land across the U.S., and we go out to them in person and find out who's farming inside those boundaries. Okay? That provides us a list of farm operators as well. We'll match those two lists, and that tells us, did we find anyone out here that we couldn't find on our mail list? And the combination of those two ways of looking at agriculture help us in our adjustment for the non-response and some of the list development problems we might run across.
Representative Purcell?
Thank you.
Representative Shaw?
Yes, thank you for the census information. My question is in regards to the new beginning farmers for BIPOC. I think the total is 684 new farmers. I'm wondering how many of those farmers are in the oil seed, grain, and other crops category. Are there any? Or
Dan?
Very good question. I don't have those broken down by farm type, but I can easily get them. So that's part of the census because it is a way of analyzing those. And so I should be able to get those for you. So I'd be happy to provide them as well as a follow-up.
Thank you. Representative Shaw.
And in regards to the cattle feedlot and cattle production, I see there's a decrease. Do you collect information or share that information about why there's a decrease in that category?
Dan?
I don't know if I have a specific answer of why there isn't as many new and beginning producers in those categories, because we didn't really delve into what made you decide to become a new or beginning producer. And if we would take it in that aspect, maybe there would be an indication of what farm types were of more interest to new and beginning producers, or if it's simply a succession planning situation where an established farm is rotating over to a new generation of producer, which could generate new and beginning farmer as well, because it's about the experience level. And so it doesn't have to be a brand new farm. It can simply be rotation of decision-making from one generation to the next as well.
Representative Shaw.
So my question is, who is collecting that data? And I think that that's important data to be collected as you're doing the census, because I think we need to do a deeper dive into why you know, certain areas are growing, certain are not, and how we can, you know, mitigate that. Thank you.
All right. Further discussion? Seeing none. Thank you so much, Dan. I appreciate you being here today before the committee.
Thank you.
All right, our next presentation is the Emerging Farmers Report. Assistant Commissioner Patrice Bailey. If you can make your way to the table and identify yourself for the record.
Okay. Get myself all set up. Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and to the committee. My name is Patrice Bailey. I am Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and I have oversight for meat and dairy inspection, food and feed safety, Emerging Farmers Office, as well as ag marketing and development. So I'm going to talk to you about Emerging Farmers, the working group, some of the things that we have done since the implementation from last year and sort of where we're going moving forward. Okay. So the Emerging Farmer Working Group actually came out of some listening sessions that we did in 2019 around the state, in which we did, we focused on six areas from Crookston, Marshall, Duluth, Minneapolis, all the way down to Rochester. And one of the things that we were looking for was, at the time, what were the barriers to entry, primarily around BIPOC, veterans, women entrepreneurs, LGBTQ plus IA, as well as young farmers. And so after we found that, you know, gathered all that information, we decided to do a report, and from that report, the legislature approved a lot of those barriers that we had identified, and the working group was signed into law in 2020. So the Emerging Farmer Working Group, their main purpose is to advise the commissioner and legislature regarding the development and implementation of the programs that MDA has in initiatives that support emerging farmers in the state. And so we meet six times a year. I try to make sure that the meetings that we have is kind of around the legislative time frame, so that members of the group get a chance to understand what the legislative process is. And so we've had three rounds or 3 years of cohorts, and now we're going into the fourth year right now. And here is a map of, yes, here is a map of where our emerging farmers in the last 3 years has come from. You can see it's quite heavy on the southeastern or the eastern side of the state. We have some that is in Clay County and over and in that area, but we have quite a lot of work to do from Halleck all the way down to Roseau, and then, of course, in the middle of the state and all the way to the southwestern part of the state. So, you know, within these 3 years, you know, we've definitely had a lot of progress. But there's more progress to move forward in that particular regard. So I can say a lot of things has happened in 4 years, and it has. Not only did we have the working group signed into law, we also had this had the Emerging Farmer Office, and I definitely want to thank Madam Chair for all the support and the committee for passing that particular legislation and seeing the importance of having the emerging farmer office. I can say that is definitely envy of all the emerging, all the states of agriculture around the country, that we are the ones that have the only office here. So last year was the first time that we actually showcase the emerging farmers section of the MDA pavilion at the state fair. We have 15 emerging farmer staff and then that volunteered at the booth to give feedback and to also talk about what emerging farmers are in Minnesota and how they can be a part of that. So I definitely want to thank all of the members from the working group and also volunteers that also came out to be able to participate. I want to go back just a little bit just to say that during the first 3 years, obviously we were in the COVID time frame and we did not have any meetings in person. All the meetings were on Teams or on Zoom. So it wasn't until this year, or say last year, in the fall, that we actually started to meet in person. So we met in North Branch. We met with the Brooklyn Park Mayor, Hollis, Winston, and this year we actually met in January at Fond du Lac Nation during the Sustainable Ag and Natural Resource Conference. And so that was really good to have. Just to note, there is an Emerging Farmer Conference held in different places, but it's held in November of every year. And it's a farmer-to-farmer conference. And so farmers are getting together to find out best practices about what's happening within the world of agriculture. We had a session. We usually have a emerging farmer session, but this time it was a emerging farmer office listening session in which we had 80 plus attendees, which is pretty high given the fact that this was the first time that we were had showcased the office. As you can see here, there were three areas that were highlighted that we received quite a bit of questions about, and that was around cooperative land access, land access itself, and market access. And so you can see here that there's a huge need for eliminating more and more barriers, even though we've eliminated quite a bit of barriers so far. So we are continuing to work on lots of opportunities here. As you can see, mental health, farmer education, and food hubs, just to talk about a few. Last year, the governor's part of his implementation was for us to expand the office. Since 2022, the office has been staffed by one person, Lillian Otenio. And so during the implementation, we were able to hire a director, who Lillian Otenio happens to be the director. We also hired a grant specialist, Emily Toner, and an outreach and engagement coordinator, Anthony Adams, that actually will start next Wednesday. So that really completes the office of three. And part of the implementation, at least with some of the things that the grant specialist, Emily Toner, would be working on or is working on, we did receive a technical assistance grant with Community Development Financial Institutions, or they call CDFIs. Currently in Minnesota, there's really just one organization that actually does a CDFI, and that's the Latino Economic Development Center. The idea is that we would like to expand technical assistance related to CDFIs through credit unions, to regular banks, so that farmers have a wide range of different financial institutions that they're able to get funding from. We also are working on a beginning farmer equipment and infrastructure grant. We've had translation services for the last 3 years, so we actually use translation services internally as well as externally as well to be able to make sure that our programs are more robust. And then we also have a technical assistance grant that is that's managed through the RFA, the Rural Finance Authority, $577,000. So where are we going in terms of what the focus is of the Emerging Farmer Office? Well, now that we have a full team, the outreach is definitely going to be pretty robust, and it's going to be very focused. We have been working with our ethnic councils to make sure that we are putting together a cohesive plan as to how we are going to reach all the different farmers throughout the state, to really focus on land access, but also on the CDFIs and beginning farmer is really some of the things that we would like to do. Language accessibility is always a challenge when it comes to translation services, but since we have some monies, we are actually able to address a lot of those issues. Most of the ethnic councils already have translation services, so it's really just making sure that those particular aspects are achieved. I'm not sure how much time that I have, but I just want to point out some of the barriers that we are dealing with besides land and finances. Here are some that that we still are dealing with through the barriers that we face. You know, we're still dealing with information is a barrier. Healthcare, student loan debt is a barrier. Lack of insurance, really dealing with the true cost of food as prices continue to go up is always an issue. And as well as having another job in addition to farming. I would take any questions that you may have, and just want to say thank you for all the support that the committee has given to make this a reality.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Bailey. It's a pleasure to see you again, and thank you for all the work that you're doing for our emerging farmers. So the first question we have is Vice Chair Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Bailey. I'm wondering if you can expand on that very last data point. We can still see it expanding engagement to greater Minnesota.
Yes.
Assistant Commissioner.
Thank you so much, Representative Purcell. One of the things that we want to do with expanding engagement is, since we had one person and, you know, in the last 2 years, now that we have a team of three, we really want to focus on greater Minnesota because it is an area of opportunity. And, you know, I always tell the staff that we have to reach people where they are and not have them come to MDA. So that's one of the things when this new person starts on Wednesday, is that part of the work plan is that he does a robust engagement within greater Minnesota from the top to the bottom. Is really his charge, but that is something that we would like to make sure that that we continue to do, because the urban area is always an opportunity, but we actually want to be able to pair them both.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Bailey, thank you for your report. Just a question on, I guess, definitions. Your working group is called the Emerging Farmers Working Group, and then at least one of your grant programs is for beginning farmers. Is there a difference between those two words, beginning and emerging?
Assistant Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and also thank you so much, Representative Anderson. I would look at it this way, is that when you're looking at people that are looking for an entry point into agriculture, There's different ways that they would codify themselves in regards to am I emerging or beginning, but as long as they have access into agriculture, the beginning farmer tax credit really originates out of the Rural Finance Authority. And so that's our biggest and most popular tax credit. But I would say that in a lot of areas, it really depends on the person that is actually looking for ways to get in, whether they feel that they are a beginning farmer or they are an emerging farmer that has had less than 10 years experience. But I've heard them said, you know, in interchangeable ways that some people want to call themselves beginning farmers instead of emerging farmers.
Further discussion? Representative Cha.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Bailey. I was going to give you a perspective of what farming was like for a new American in the 1980s. Okay? So we came here in the 1980s. We used to farm in what is now known as Enver Grove Heights. There's no water access in that acre of land that my parents farmed. So what we did with our milk jugs, our 1 gallon milk jugs, is we would fill them up, put them with, you know, with water, transport them to our farm every other day, and hand water all our crops. That was 1980s. So today with this program, you know, it's come a long way. And, you know, thanks to the support of this committee and members who support programs like this one. Thank you.
All right. Further discussion? Okay. Well, thank you, Assistant Commissioner Bailey. I appreciate your time and your work on this Emerging Farmers Report. You know, I've one of the biggest thing that I want to encourage the department is to continue to do good outreach to reach as many farmers as possible, especially the ones with the most need, and have, you know, and particularly been farming but has been underrepresented, and so I really will continue to relay that, and as always, we'll continue to look to further that relationship and that support.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and also thank you so much in support to the whole committee. Thank you so much.
All right, members, our next business item, we'll do a motion first. This is a motion on House File 4323. This is a bill that we heard before regarding the Beginning Farmers Tax Credit in committee. This will be sent to the registrar. It will be a vehicle bill. So any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of referring House File 4323 to the General Register, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no. The ayes have it. The motion prevails. House File 4323 is referred to the General Register. Next will be a bill, and Vice Chair Purcell will take the gavel.
When you are ready, Representative Vang, would you like to move Bill 4908 before the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move 4908 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
All right, Representative Vang, thank you for your motion, and please present your bill.
Madam Chair, I have the A3 amendment too as well, so I move the A3 and I'll discuss that a little bit, and then once we adopt that, then we can talk about the bill. So House File 4908 defines what a limited resource farmer is and replaces emerging farmers with a new term. However, after much thought, and consideration, I didn't really like the idea of calling our farmers limited, so I returned back to the word emerging farmers while still maintaining the change in definition of what an emerging farmer is. So the A3 also modifies a new definition to add farmers who rent from an incubator farm and delete sections that no longer need to be in the bill. So I ask members for support to the amendment to put in the shape that I would like to be in.
Thank you. Representative Vang moves the A3 amendment to House File 4908. Any discussion to the A3? Lee Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Vang, appreciate your bill and your amendment. We've talked about today so far beginning farmers, emerging farmers, limited resource farmers. It can tend to be a bit confusing. I hope as we go along in the bill today, we'll get clarification of just exactly why we're making all of these changes to definitions, and the understanding will be coming forth. Thank you.
Representative Vang, do you have any comments you'd like to make to that at this time?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, yes, we can have a further discussion to the bill once the amendment is adopted too.
Any other discussion to the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A3 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no.
No.
The ayes have it, and the A3 is adopted. Representative Vang, other discussion to your bill as amended?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this bill is building on the work that Minnesota has led on supporting the next generation of farmers. The most important part of this bill clarifies what an emerging farmer is. So this bill defines emerging farmers under two criteria. One is limited land access, and the second is limited market access. Under limited land access, you are an emerging farmer if your current lease or rental arrangement is no more than 3 years, or if you rent from an incubator farm. This does not prevent you from renewing your lease with the landowner multiple times. You also cannot be renting if you are directly related or married to the landowner in order to be considered an emerging farmer. Under the second criteria, you'll be considered an emerging farmer if you have limited market access, in which the majority of your farm income is from direct sales to consumers. So this bill also references other programs that mentions emerging farmers and updates those languages. And that is pretty much the gist of the bill. And I'm happy to take, I believe there are some testifiers too as well, and I can take questions afterwards.
All right, thank you, Representative Vang. Our first testifier we have is Levi Welburn. If you are able to approach the stand. And after this testifier, Sean Carroll is on deck. Welcome to the committee. When you are ready, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. My name is Levi Welburn. I'm sorry, I'm always new to this, so it's wonderful to be here. Am I allowed to speak now?
Go ahead.
Thank you so much. I represent LEDC, the Latino Economic Development Center, but today I'm actually taking that hat off, putting the hat on for as being an emerging farmer, speaking to you all. I come here as a proud and young Afro-Latino, queer, disabled, emerging farmer. I'm a living, breathing emerging farmer. That is my definition for me. I have all the faith for us and our future. Chair Vang has been our champion. And continues to be, and I'm just so excited to continue to work with you. But especially for the state of Minnesota. The state of Minnesota, we have the opportunity to fundamentally change how we view agriculture as a whole. We have the opening for those that are can create new equitable opportunities for us and create a new legacy of agriculture. We know throughout this country that agriculture has a history of institutional racism, especially within generations, and that might make people uncomfortable. That's a very uncomfortable word, but I also believe if some communities, especially white communities, can say that word, we can too. And I believe in the uncomfortableness can create growth and beauty from that too. As an emerging farmer, I just was at a conference with 66 farmers working on financial literacy that was funded by grants that was for emerging farmers. If we did not have those opportunities, we would not have that workshop. We would not be filling half of your farmers markets or grocery stores. We would not be facilitating most of these changes for our community. So I ask for the voices of the farmers, I'm not just here for me. The ask is the need for land access and market access, for grants and to be seen and to be heard and to be worked with. Especially if you cannot speak our language, I definitely encourage to learn from us, take lessons, or also just have opportunities for translation, because we do see barriers even when we're trying to sell our produce. If you don't speak our language, it makes people uncomfortable and you don't work with us. And we want to build that. We want to create a new foundation where we can work together. Emerging farmers, especially the future of it, are the children. I worked at this conference and kids are running around saying, I want to be a farmer. This is exciting. This should excite you all, and especially that type of passion. But without the acknowledgement of the barriers and the challenges that we have, it discourages the youth. It discourages the next future for us. And so we don't want that. We want to encourage them and feel like they have a future. So I hope and that we can build hope and advocacy for our future, and especially since we are seeing the data of white farmers, especially their children, not wanting to always own the farm. So where does that land go? And we want to work with you in providing that land and that stewardship together. So I don't know how much time I have, but I just want to continue as much as I can. Let's collaborate together. It's about a collaboration. It's about support as emerging farmers. And to me, that definition does include BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, Latino individuals, because this is our history. And this is a future for us. You can build that for us. This is a change not only for Minnesota. You can see through the data that Dan presented of we are the consensus of a national change. We saw the need for emerging farmers. That's why we created the department, because we saw the disparities that BIPOC, LGBTQIA, and women farmers face. That's why we created it in general. So let's keep that work going. Lastly, thank you for the language. If we do make those language changes, I hope that we do support still wholesale producers, especially sometimes this also is excluding aspiring farmers who are currently renting without including farm workers. So please do that for us too. I also just want to say, I know this is a complicated process. I'm not in your shoes. I don't also know law, right? But I do know history and our people and the kind of passion and resilience. We have faced these challenges throughout time. This is generations. And it's scary to have people push back. We know this every single day. But if we can also fight and do this fight together, we can create history. And Minnesota can be the part of that. People look to this state for change, especially for agriculture. And I would love to see us make an example of how we can continue to fight this fight and work together on that. So I see, and especially your story with your mother and the challenges that you faced, and also you sitting here, it's beautiful, because even though you went through that, you know to advocate for this, and especially the future of kids that want to be just like you. And that's why we sit here today, and you sit here today, is to create that change and to work with the people. So work with us, listen to us, meet us at the farmers market, visit our farms, talk to our children, have them excited for this too. Don't let us be discouraged, don't erase us, because we are your future. So I just want to make that very clear, and everything, not just for this grant, but every grant moving forward, emerging farmers, whatever that word is for you, I just want to say we are proud BIPOC LGBTQIA women farmers, and we are here for you and to work with you. So we are your people, Chair Vang, we are your people, and we are going to be by your side. Where this doesn't stop here, this is just the beginning. And so please advocate and change history with us. Let us work together to make just not only for this bill, for everyone. And thank you, Commissioner Patrice Bailey, for being a part of that change and creating this department and standing for us. But everyone at this table, thank you for what you do. And thank you for taking this time. I also want to say, too, you know, ask me any questions. Find me afterwards. I love challenging conversations, because this is how we grow together. This is how we make change for our country and for our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Welborn. Next up is Sean Carroll. Thank you. And following Mr. Carroll will be Kazua Berry. Please state your name for the record and share with us your testimony.
Sean Carroll, I'm the Policy Director for Land Stewardship Project. Madam Vice Chair, Madam Chair, Committee, thank you for your time. We submitted a detailed letter with recommendations around this amendment. What I'd like to take 2 minutes to talk to you about is why more BIPOC farmers on the land is important to our organization, whose mission is promoting sustainable agriculture. So to be clear, I'm a white male. I work for an organization that for 40 years has now engaged 4,500 members and almost 60,000 supporters, the vast majority of whom are rural farmers and white people. And over many years, those white rural farmers have stood up to say why racial inequities in our farming system are important and central to sustainable agriculture. We know that disparities, racial disparities exist in our farming system. Access to land, access to resources, is disproportionately excludes BIPOC farmers. That's important to white rural farmers who are part of LSP and who are in our community, because more BIPOC farmers on the land means another farmer down the road on the land. More BIPOC farmers on the land means stronger rural communities. And addressing racial inequities in our farming system means addressing the same system that's driving farmers off the land while corporations continue to profit, the same system that excludes all farmers from building wealth, and that disproportionately excludes BIPOC farmers from building wealth. So as we go forward, I would encourage us to continue talking about race and to continue finding solutions that are going to put more BIPOC farmers on the land, because that's going to build stronger rural communities for all farmers. Lastly, I'd like to say that working in partnership with legislators, listening to BIPOC farmers and to white farmers and to rural community members is the opportunity that we have to build broad support, broad consensus over what our farming system looks like. It's not only the ability to offer feedback on legislation, but it's the opportunity to craft solutions together from the ground up. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. The next person, Kazua Berry, please approach the stand. Let us know your name and title and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Kazua Berry. I am the farm director at Big River Farms.
Proceed.
I am also an immigrant, and I'm also a farmer, so I will be speaking a little bit about both today. At Big River Farms, where we submitted a letter to you all that you should have through the food group, which is our organization, you will be able to read a little bit more about programming. So to save time, I won't talk about that piece because all of the supporters in the audience know who we are and what we do. But as an immigrant, I have over 15 years of farming experience with my parents, and the last 4 years, my husband and I, we decided to start farming on our own to build our own farm enterprise. And thankfully, we were able to lease some land at Big River Farms. We started there for about 3 years, and then recently we moved our operation to our homestead in Maplewood. It's just an eighth of an acre, and it's literally just our, you know, our backyard and our front yard. Because we have four kids, I have an infant, and it's really hard going to the farm every day with my kids to fulfill our direct market. So we had a farmer's market for 3 years, and we also had our own CSA. And I can still remember the very cold nights being in the pack shed at Big River Farms, washing and packing our produce to fulfill our CSA needs, and also be able to, you know, have our produce ready for the farmer's market. It's extremely challenging going to the farmer's market with four kids. Especially children that can't sit still for about 3 hours and they want to run around, that's a lot to ask of them. So we decided to explore more holistic options, which indirect markets such as aggregated opportunities to sell with other farmers to bring in income, food hubs, selling through the LEAF program, and any other wholesale opportunities where we have been exploring. But with this new language proposal, that would discourage me to look into more of those viable options to sustain my farm business. And this is just one of, this is my story. There are plenty of farmers out there who have stories that are similar to mine. I work full-time as the farm director. I am still farming as well. And many of our farmers work full-time and are still farming as well. And they want to also seek viable options to be able to sustain their farm businesses. But with this new language where it doesn't include the, where majority of the sales comes from indirect market, really provides a lot of limitations for folks who are really looking into more of those aggregated pieces, such as farm to institution. That's a form of aggregation that we use to be able to bring in more viable income. So with that language change, it makes it really challenging. And also because I'm not leasing, I'm using my homestead, but when I want to scale up, I wouldn't be qualified under the terminology emerging farmers. So that doesn't make my hardships any less. And I understand that there are other stories that are gonna, that has more hardship. And so the language is not inclusive of all the farmers' stories in the profiles that we have in the state of Minnesota. So I would encourage, you know, to proceed on and to listen to the voices and to hear more diverse voices from farmers who whose stories, you know, are not identified and not included with this new language change. And also, by doing that, I hope that we can create laws that are shaped for the people and not vice versa, because this language essentially will encourage us to start to not go into those wholesale markets, because why? Why would we do that? We're going to be limited in these other areas. So I just wanted to thank you all for giving us this time and this opportunity to be here, and just thank you all for being here today.
Thank you very much. Are there other members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Please approach the stand, introduce yourself for the record. Representative Sensenmura.
I just had heard, I thought I heard the testifier say that there was a letter, but I'm not seeing a letter from Big River Farms in the packet, so just would love to see that later if there is one.
It wasn't included in your packet. It wasn't submitted in the correct format on time. So perhaps if that testifier can resend and we can get that out to the committee. Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Farhia Khalif. I am with SAFI, and I'm here to continue to talk about the important that we have as emerging farmers. I have some different mindset, but I just want to say thank you to Reverend Representative Vang for considering changing this new language that is being still developed and build it and inclusion for the community, because, you know, we need that. And having that as an emerging farmer, someone who are immigrant, as a black farmer, there's a lot of black farmers here and the urban farmers here in the state of Minnesota that will be deleted out of this language. But I'm glad that, again, that the new amendment that you just said, that you changed your mind, we really appreciate that. As a black farmer in here in this state of Minnesota, for us, it's not really included. But also, I want to thank Representative Chow earlier when he said, he asked the question about 640 about PIPOC or emerging farmers here in the state of Minnesota that was not included early on the data when Dan was talking about it. And I know there's something in continuation that he will be doing that will clarify what's happening in the state of Minnesota. And also, I just want to say, Representative Anderson, I hope that you get peace with the language of emerging farmers. Emerging farmers, like an AC commissioner earlier, what he said, we're going to be emerging, not beginning, because we're going to get there, because we are new farmers. We are immigrants. We are blacks. We are all these titles that we have, that I hope that Representative Anderson, that you understand and support emerging farmers in the state of Minnesota. Also, we should worry about the climate change more often than we worry about emerging farmer language being changed and the environmental issues that we have. And you see what's happening last few months in the state of Minnesota. The climate is really something that I'm from Africa. I'm loving this and opportunity that we're having this weather. But also, I get used to the snow in this state. But what's happening is turbulent, isn't it, as the climate change. So I'm not here for the climate change, but this bill today for House File 4908, I'm hoping that you guys will consider supporting the emerging farmers, black farmers, regardless of where they're farming, but also, like Representative Cha said earlier, we need the data. But that will help you as the legislators where we're at with that. So I'm hoping that when you see the issues when it comes to new farmers, and myself, I'm farming at Big River Farm. There's more than 20 farmers there. When I first began 3 years ago, I was hesitating to talk to other farmers. You know who you have? You have white farmers, you have black farmers, you have Hmong farmers, you have Latino farmers, but guess what we call ourselves? Emerging farmers. And we are now building the trust to work together. Some of them are here today. And I really appreciate you taking the time from work today to be here from Big River Farm team is here. I just want to say, members, you vote today, even though you're going to lay it over and support this bill. Remember, the community is watching, community is listening, and I hope that, Representative Vang, that you will continue our conversation with this bill, and with this here, we support you. And we support you the issues about you care about when it comes to emerging farmers working with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, including such programs like Big River Farm, Land Stewardship Project, and the Good Acre, and many other like WEI that are doing a lot of great work for the immigrant and black farmers in the state of Minnesota. We hope you guys continue in funding those programs. That means for us, when we work full-time and we come back to the field, we work in another 8 hours. So these programs that you guys supporting and funding will help programs like I'm doing with Safi. So for the opportunity for here today and other emerging farmers here, thank you for your time. We really appreciate you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any other members of the public who wish to speak on this bill, please approach the stand, identify yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the
Good day, everyone. My name is Michael Cheney. I really didn't anticipate speaking today. It's been a few years ago that I actually came forward and birthed the first urban egg legislation in the state of Minnesota. And I remember, just as a bit of a historian, Representative Poppy, she asked me, she said, Michael, what is urban farming? I thought about it for a few minutes. You know, I'm not the smartest guy on the planet, but I said, farming in urban areas? We did a study, $250,000, to determine that what urban farming meant. You know, to your point, Representative, you know, is it emerging? Is it beginning? Is it urban? Is it rural? Is it suburban? I declare that it's all of the above, that our efforts here should be about growing all farmers, making available to all young people across this state. When Representative Holloman asked me, she said, Michael, I want to support this bill. Of course, he was Republican. That was kind of odd. But he said, I want to support this urban ag bill. And Representative Poppy said, well, you know, I don't really think my friends on the House Finance will really understand this. But we kept badgering. We kept pushing. We kept moving the train forward. And we came forward, and to this day, I still remember, you know, somebody said, Michael, that is cutting-edge legislation. And so it is, and it was, and it continues to be. Yesterday, you might have read in the news where Jeff Bezos' wife donated millions of dollars to the state of Minnesota. Let me point out to those of you who may not know of it, but one of those groups that she gave $2 million was Appetite for Change, an urban farm effort group in North Minneapolis. One of those groups was CAPI, an organization of Asian American Pacific Islanders in Brooklyn Park, who are currently undergoing trying to build a greenhouse so that they can build a sustainable egg system that can help repair a broken ag system. And so while we're here deliberating over this is emerging or if this is beginning, I want us to look to all of these young people who believe, as Jeff Basil's wife believed in the work that we're doing here in Minnesota, believe that if we want to address not only food insecurity, but national security, that we continue to invest in these kind of bills and moving our effort forward. In talking years ago, rep to going to senator's office, you know, I asked the question, you know, in life you can either be first or you can be forgotten. You know, we all know who Jackie Robinson was, the first African-American baseball player. Very few of us know who the second guy was into the system. That was Larry Doby. And so, again, we were first to the table here in Minnesota as ag visionaries that believed in urban farming. I want us to continue to keep climbing that hill because there's people who believe that what we're doing here in Minnesota in the Department of Ag is wise. We were first in that as well, thanks to the leadership of Patrice and Tom Pedersen. And so we continue to be first upon first upon first. And I want to keep, I won't be satisfied till every young person here in the state of Minnesota is actualizing and visualizing where do they fit in this food system. Last I want to end with, you know, the reason I came to this legislation was I could not get funding on the city level. I could not get funding on the county level. And so I had to come to the Council on Black Minnesotans because I wanted to buy the last remaining greenhouse in North Minneapolis. Unfortunately, we moved too slow. I lost that opportunity. But there were those behind who came behind, and Marcus Carr and folks from Youth Prize are moving forward to advance that vision. 4 years ago, Elon Musk's brother Kimball got involved with Project Sweetie Pie and created a philanthropy where we've given away millions of dollars to BIPOC farmers all over the world. I approached him with an idea that I call Foster Green. Adopt a lot, adopt a plot, adopt a garden box. And so once again, philanthropy, following the leadership of government, saw value. And so he's donating to the state of Minnesota 450 raised beds that we're going to deploy across the state of Minnesota so that we can incubate the knowledge, the skills, and the number of farmers that we're growing here in Minnesota. So I'd love you to move forward with this bill and to keep on going, keep on growing. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you for your testimony. Any other members of the public wishing to testify, please approach the stand. Please try and keep your comments as brief as able, as well as getting your point across. This will be our last testifier. Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Julius Cochran. I am a new emerging farmer. I recently purchased 80 acres of land in Mora, Minnesota, Peace Township. Farming has kind of been in my blood, you know. My father, he grew up on a farm in Attapugas, Georgia. His first cousin was Jose Williams. I've had many family members in the South grow up on farms, and I've had a lot of family members that lost farms due to the KKK running them off the land, taxes. Some neighbors said that, you know, one of my family members owed them seed, like $300 in seed. You know, there were so many ways in the South for them to run us off the property, take our land, you know. But it in the North here, you know, in the Midwest, we never really had opportunity to get land. We had more land in the South after Reconstruction than we had up here, you know. And the thing is that, you know, when I first heard about the Emergent Farming Program, I'm like, oh man, you know, they're really trying to help minorities, you know. But the more, you know, I immerse myself into this and with the new laws and, you know, watering down language and, you know, I don't really see, like, how we can get a leg up, you know? I see it just becoming broader and broader and broader, you know, to where everybody, I mean, you know, everybody's going to have access to this, really, you know? Not unless we do something to tighten the rules, you know, to where we're fully vetting these people that are coming to say, oh, are you an emerging farmer? You know, are you a beginning farmer, whatever? You know, are you a first-generation farmer? You know, I agree with the ideals and what we're trying to do here, but the more the system waters down, you know, the less I have faith in it, you know? Especially when you can't be specific to a class of people. You know, you can't say, you know, African-American ADOs or, you know, Hmong farmers directly, whatever it may be, you know? Especially when ADOs people have had the most trauma, you know, that need the most help psychologically, mentally, you know? They don't understand what they're missing. You know, when it comes to agriculture and health equity and, you know, can't fathom the idea. They don't have the experience. But, you know, I got into this and I bought a farm to get back into farming, to take everything that they said I couldn't have and to give those opportunities back to the youth. You know, so I just hope you guys do the same.
Thank you for your testimony. Due to lack of time constraints, that's going to be our last testifier today. I guess the Department of Agriculture is interested in clarifying a couple of things. And members, the food group and Kazua's letter is included and posted on our committee's meeting page, so apologies that it did not get into the packet, but it is available for members and for the public. Commissioner Peterson, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, Tom Peterson, Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And I just want to thank Chair Vang for working on this and continuing to work on it. I think as we kind of look at this going back, I kind of look at it as a suite of things that we have. It's really good to have the Dan Loftus come and kind of present, you know, this picture of agriculture in Minnesota. I think for years we've kind of looked at what we see in agriculture and trying to help. And I think as the department and the legislature, we really tried to build out everything. I think I'm pretty much the stereotypical age, race, everything for farmers in Minnesota. And but agriculture is changing, a lot of opportunities, and kind of as we look at agriculture for everybody, we've really tried to build out many different things across agriculture. So not just the down payment assistance program, which has been really unique. When I go to my commissioner national meetings, people want to know how we're doing this and how it works and everything. But the beginning farmer tax credit also is, everybody tells me that's one of the, not the best, but the best tax credit in the state. And that helps hundreds of farmers get into farming and grow that. And also our beginning farmer loan program within the Department of Agriculture. That's our number one loan program far and away. And so other states don't have something like that. We also have our FarmLink program that helps connect farmers. And so we have this like suite of things that we're building out in our state to help really improve those numbers. And the down payment assistance piece is part of that. And I look at it too as kind of a work in progress as we look at this piece and continuing to change it. And so the bottom line is when we finish this round, almost 100 new farmers will own a farm in Minnesota. And somebody who's gone through that process, that's a pretty neat thing. And so to actually go through that and work through that. So I think as we kind of look at this, as any new program, we've done this with the beginning farm loan, beginning tax credit. We've done it with our loan programs. We adjust that continuously. We really appreciate the work of Chair Vang, and we'll continue to work through it, because I think, as you've seen today, and we look through the definitions of emerging or beginning or limited resource, I think we all kind of, you know, see the same path and everything. It's just, you know, how we word that and phrase it. And so I just look forward to continuing to work with Chair Vang. Appreciate the work, because I think at the end of the day, it's going to benefit Minnesota well. Because I think when you look at what Dan presented today, we see a decrease in the number of farms, but we saw an increase in the number of farmers, which is actually a really good trend that I see happening in Minnesota. So thank you for your work on it, and we'll continue to work with you as it goes through the process.
Thank you, Commissioner Peterson. Opening up to member questions and discussion, Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair Sam Vang, for championing this space. 40 years, the LSP has been working in addressing inequities and fairness in this space. 44 years, I've been dealing with inequities as a new American. I continue my journey that my parents could not sustain. The barriers they could not navigate, which led me to be a farmer and today a state legislator. To the testifiers and the people in this room, your voice is represented at this table and in this community, and thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. Lead Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Vang, again, just trying to understand some of the changes here. In the underlying statute in 17.133, it says that the limit of income is $250,000 per year, but in your new language in the amendment 1.19, that number drops to $100,000 in annual gross farm products. Could you explain why you're deviating from the definition in statute?
Representative Vang.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, so line 1.19 is the language that was taken from the down payment assistance program bill, and so when we were drafting this this bill, we kind of changed that language from the bill that we heard prior regarding to the down payment assistance. So this amendment just make sure that the language from the bill, my bill, we heard earlier in session, the down payment assistance is the same as, is aligned with what's referenced in emerging farmers.
Lead Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A little bit confusing, but I think I follow that. Then one last comment in the handout from Commissioner Bailey, the page about listening sessions and the things that the emerging farmers feel is important to them, the one that gets the most points or bonus points, whatever, is one that talks about cooperative land access. And to me, cooperative land access would mean a group of farmers going together and purchasing property. Yet in your bill language here, that would be forbidden. It says spouse or husband at any time having a direct or indirect ownership interest in farmland. So would this disqualify somebody who is part of a co-op from taking part in this program?
Representative Vang.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I think I will probably have more discussions about what exactly is a cooperative land. I think I know that we do have cooperative ags in statute, and perhaps Mr. Sullivan can help define what a cooperative statute that specifically, but I will have to just look at what a cooperative land looks like to understand what that is. I believe what the in terms of if you are a renter that is directly related, for example, if you're a son of that landowner and you're renting from your father, you won't be considered an emerging farmer under this definition.
Lee Anderson.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. Thank you for that answer. Then one final question with the requirement that most of the crop would be sold to directly to consumers. And again, in your amendment, you talk about industrial hemp and cannabis, and I would think especially hemp would be sold to a processor, which would not be a direct sale to a consumer. So how would you handle that?
Representative Vang.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I think that is a good point. I'm still having more discussion about whether or not to expand the limited market access definition, but I'm happy to have more conversations about that too, because some of the testifiers have talked about there are more farmers, emerging farmers that are selling into institutions or schools or hospitals, and that is an ongoing conversation I'm having with them. So I think that can be also included in that conversation.
And just as a note, the motion is for this to be laid over. It is 2:30. I'd like us to wrap up in the next perhaps 5 minutes if members are able to stay. Thank you. Representative Jacob.
Well, thank you, Chair Purcell. I probably should have talked to Representative Anderson before. I have a follow-up on some of the language about limited land access. So just it very clearly states, means farming under a lease or other rental agreement of no more than 3 years in duration when the person leasing or renting the land is not related to the lessee or renter by blood or marriage. And we got into this blood or marriage issue with zoning issues in Winona County based on not being able to prohibit someone a single family dwelling based on whether they got divorced from somebody, got married to somebody, had a child with somebody. And this appears like this would go down that very same road. If I'm receiving the program and I'm eligible, but I have a relationship with someone who has a farm, but I'm not married to them. So now I have a child, my marriage caused, or actually my sexual relation or lack of marriage caused me to have a blood relationship to that person. Is that person now going to be disqualified based on their what they did in the bedroom?
If you can take this one, Representative Vang.
Madam Chair, Representative Jacob, I'm a little confused about the kind of relationship you're describing, so I'm not too clear. And the example I will use would be, you know, if you're the father and you have a son that's renting from your land, you know, I wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't be considered an emerging farmer because you do have that direct relationship. Or if that's your wife that's renting land from you also wouldn't be considered in an emerging farmer because you will have that direct inheritance.
This sounds like an issue that perhaps you all can continue with looking at precedent from Winona County and working with council as well. Final thought, Representative Jacob.
Well, no, I'd like to clarify that more. Just say I'm a woman and I qualified for this program. I have a sexual relationship with a farmer who has a farm. I have a child with that person, but I'm not married to them. Am I now disqualified from the program because I have a child and I'm related by blood to that farmer? I mean, what I'm driving at is government basing their, whether they're going to grant or withhold government programs based on marital status, divorce, birth, or death is very problematic. Because I can give you more examples about birth, death, and marriage that would play this out in many different levels. And what we found in Winona County was that was discriminatory.
Representative Vang, you wish to comment?
Madam Chair, Representative Jacob, I think if you like more clarification on what is defined as a legal marriage, I'm happy to further clarify that a little bit more. I don't think if you're a divorced woman, you wouldn't be able to qualify as an emerging farmer.
Never married.
Other member questions or comments as we wrap up this bill? Seeing none, Representative Vang, to your closing remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for your time. I just want to remind folks that, you know, these Emerging farmers initiatives are quite new. The farmland down payment assistance, for example, was created 2 years ago. And we've seen a lot of success with this program. So I'm really proud to see the tremendous support for these initiatives, but this bill really just continues to build on to that work to make sure that we're addressing the needs of our next generation of farmers. And I want to thank you to all the testifiers today for coming and to share your stories and your experience about what it means to be the farmer that has been left behind. You know, I've chaired this committee, and I've told people that, you know, many folks have asked me, am I a farmer? And the short answer is no, but I also say I'm the farmer that got left behind. I represent the farmers that got left behind and that didn't get the support that they could have gotten. And that's what we're doing here today. We're supporting the farmers that got left behind and so that we can continue on and seeing the next generation of farmers.
Thank you, Chair Vang. And with that, House File 4908 is laid over. And our next meeting is Tuesday, March 26th. This meeting is adjourned.